Welcome to the book show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
This is Cutting Edge Talk about Cutting Edge Books. And we want to welcome two new affiliates to the Book Show Radio Network. We have KFNX in Phoenix, Arizona, and WALE in Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome aboard, folks. This evening, we're going to be talking to New York Times best-selling author Bill Gertz about his book, Breakdown, How America's Intelligence Failures Led to September 11th. Bill Gertz is the defense and national security reporter for the Washington Times up in the Washington, D.C. area, and is the best-selling author of Betrayal and the China Threat. He is one of the most respected reporters in his field, and according to the inside jacket of his book, he has unrivaled access to sources within the Pentagon and the American intelligence community. He lives near Washington, D.C., and if you're interested, his website is www.gertzfile.com. That's GERTZFILE.com.
Well, according to the Drudge Report, he had some documents he shouldn't have had.
Is that right?
And the CIA came after him for him, so I'm real curious to talk to him about this.
I didn't even know that. I'm glad you brought it up. Among other things, Mr. Gertz explains in his book how the 9/11 attacks were the result of a massive breakdown in the U.S. intelligence system that places, according to him, high-tech gimmickry and backstabbing bureaucrats above fieldwork and human intelligence. Gertz exposes how the Clinton administration refused to target bin Laden, even though it knew he was the mastermind of several attacks against Americans. And Gertz shows how an arrest of a terrorist in the Philippines provided the first clues to al-Qaeda's use of suicide airline attacks, but neither the FBI nor the CIA ever pursued the information. A lot to talk about, and we're going to talk to Bill Gertz a little later in the show.
Right. I'm just curious how much of this is Monday morning quarterbacking versus...
I thought the same thing when I was reading...
Yeah, you piece it together afterwards. Oh, yeah, that makes sense, but... Yeah,
that's right. That's right. There are a few things in there, like a Phoenix memo, apparently, that...
Right.
Written by an agent, and she was talking about how she thought that one of the I think it was a Saudi Arabian in one of the flight schools seemed to be taking flying lessons.
But didn't care about landing.
Yeah, didn't care about landing. So we'll get into that a little bit later. If you want to give us a call here at the studio, the number is 788-0990. For those of you in Phoenix and Rhode Island, you're not going to be able to reach us. This is just for the Richmond area people only. If you want to reach us long distance, 1-877-WLEE-990. Coming up today on the book show, we're going to talk about what's news in publishing this week without author, journalist, and e-publishing MJ Rose. Normally, MJ Rose joins us every week. MJ is at the New York is Book Country Book Festival. Apparently, it is America's premier book festival.
But she'll be back next week to talk about
it. She's going to be back next week, and she's going to fill us in on what happened at the New York is Book Country Festival. If you're interested, however, in any of MJ Rose's books, such as her new release, Flesh Tones, go to www.mjrose.com. We're also going to announce new contests. If there are any writers or authors out there that are listening to us, we have our Contest Corner segment towards the end of the show, sponsored by Writer's Digest Magazine, and Jack's going to announce any new contests. Also, later in the show, we're going to announce America's best-selling books this past week. These are America's top 10 best-selling books the past week, according to the USA Today. And for those of you who are new listeners, and I know we have a lot of new listeners in Phoenix and Providence, Rhode Island, what is the book show about? It's about books, and it's about the people that write them. But it is not an NPR-style book interview program, folks. This is cutting-edge talk about cutting-edge books. And we talk to authors who have written books on hot topics, timely issues, provocative and controversial subjects, fiction and nonfiction. We do it all. Now, a couple of our sponsors, we have Writer's Digest Magazine. They're
a new sponsor.
Yeah, they're a new sponsor. They are America's number one writing magazine.
Right.
You can find them at www.writersdigest.com. Also, enovel.com. Go to www.enovel.com for books and more. If you want to get published or read great books, it could be an ebook, could be a print book, could be an audiobook, go to www.enovel.com for books and more. And also Pages Magazine. This is the magazine for people who love books, and they have a special subscription rate of just $10. Go to www.ireadpages.com and click subscriptions.
Absolutely. Now, keep it easy. You can always go to thebookshow.com. Remember the in front of it, thebookshow.com. All the links for all the sponsors are there as well.
Right, right. Okay, what's news in publishing this week? MJ Rose is not with us, so Jack and I are going to do it on our own. And I mentioned earlier, New York is book country, so that was a nice segue, which seems to be a very popular word these days, but that's a nice segue to our first story. And our first story is, what in the world is New York is book country? We're in the book business. We're in the book industry, and we're not particularly well-versed on what this New York is book country is all about. Well, it is arguably the nation's number one book festival. It actually ran from this past Wednesday through today. Today, Sunday the 29th, is the so-called street fair, and this is kind of the culmination of the book festival.
Does it say where in New York is being held?
The actual street fair is on Fifth Avenue.
Oh, nice.
I know that. The other five action-packed days, as it says on the website, have events throughout the city, apparently. There are author talks, workshops, panel discussions, readings, and special events all over New York City. So it's a really big deal.
Next year, we should broadcast live from there.
Yeah, next year, we're going to broadcast live from there. And it is, New York is Book Country is a not-for-profit organization that promotes the joy of reading through the celebration of books. So it's a pretty big deal up there, and it looks like they had really good weather for it, too. All right, we have another news item, and for those of you who are in the publishing industry, you know of Houghton Mifflin. This is a huge,
big-time publisher.
Yeah, this is a big-time publisher. I think they do a lot of educational publishing. Well, Houghton Mifflin is still owned by the financially strapped Vivendi Universal Corporation, which is based in France. This French conglomerate went on an acquisition rage, I mean,
yes.
Yeah, and then
binge.
There you go. That's the word I was looking for. Not rage, binge. And they bought up a lot of media assets, including Houghton Mifflin. Well, they're going to sell it, and the selling price is $3 billion. That's with a B for
boy.
Are they
putting it on eBay, or is this? Does it already have a buyer for it?
No, it's not on eBay, but it's. They have some interest from some investment banking groups.
Let's float some junk bonds and see if we can pick it up.
Boy, I tell you what, if the book show could ever own a publisher like Houghton Mifflin, imagine how big we'd be. We'd be on every radio station in the country, I'm sure. Next news item, rampant illiteracy, oh the horror. I think all of you, or many of you, might. There is a frighteningly high level of illiteracy in America. Apparently, almost one quarter of adults fall into the lowest reading level. They don't say what
a
low.
A lot of people just don't like to read. I mean, just because they don't read.
No, Jack, I'm serious. I've read some amazing statistics. Like one out of four, one out of five people have a hard time reading. Remember, there are a lot of
so
recent
you're saying,
immigrants.
Let's say my closest 100 friends, 25 of them can't read, Alex.
You happen to be fortunate, Jack. You're well educated. You were able to go to college. Still, most people don't even have a college degree in this
country.
Oh, okay,
but of my closest friends, right. Probably myself and one or two others went to college. The people I grew up with, they can all read, Alex.
I'd like
to know where they got these statistics.
Well, that's a good question.
Or
you
statistics.
Know what? Talking about statistics, I was just reading the newspaper. Remember you used to hear the statistic that the internet was doubling every 100 days?
Correct.
I just read an article that statistic was started by some people at WorldCom or something, and then they dug in to see, well, where did WorldCom get this? There never really was a sound basis for saying that the internet traffic
well,
doubled every
100
days.
Well, they start with one, two,
right,
four.
Right. So you're right. Statistics can be bent and they can be manufactured.
I mean, they might have picked some town out in West Virginia in the woods.
True.
And that's the one group. I mean, come on.
True, true, true. Okay, well, let's get back to the rampant illiteracy story here. What's happening is, in an effort to make literacy statistics a little less scary, the Horror Writers Association is hosting an eBay auction to benefit pro-literacy worldwide. That's an organization, pro-literacy worldwide. And among the items on eBay, so if you're interested in buying some rather rare or valuable literary items on eBay.
You type in what, illiterate?
I don't know where you type in illiterate.
You gotta have a key word here.
Well, okay, here's what you can buy on eBay if you want to help illiterate people. You can buy Thomas Harris's softcover advanced copy of The Silence of the Lambs. You can get the first U.S. hardcover edition of Clive Barker's The Damnation Game. And you can get limited edition prints depicting scenes from Stephen King novels such as Carrie and The Shining. Now, you really have to be a pretty serious literary type to be interested in buying these things, I think.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's the story. So if you want to help literate people, go to eBay.
That's the story, and you're sticking to it.
That's right. All right, next news item, wanted a few good homes. There is a pet-loving author, and this author named Lisa Rogak has come up with a way to help pets that don't have a home. She is inviting readers to come to her website, which is signededitions.net. Signededitions.net. And if you go there, she has a book entitled Perpetual Care: Who Will Look After Your Pets If You're Not Around? And if you buy her book, 33% of the proceeds go to this nonprofit humane organization that helps pets looking for a home. Kind of interesting, kind of cute, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the final news item in our What's News publishing is Digital Slush Pile. Now, let me explain what this means. First of all, folks, you know that there are publishers that are based on the Internet. For example, one of our main sponsors,
eNovel.com, right?
eNovel.com is based on the Internet. Well, there's another one. There are others. One of them is iUniverse at iUniverse.com. And if you're an aspiring writer and you've written a romance novel and you get published on iUniverse and your romance novel sells more than 500 copies in a six-month period, well, what happens is the iUniverse board will take a look at your book, and if they think it's good enough, they will send it on to Kensington.
Oh, so it's not guaranteed then?
It's
if you
not,
sell 500.
It's not guaranteed. It says that the iUniverse editorial board will review your book.
Gotcha.
Okay, the ones that sell more than 500 in 6 months. And if it's good enough, your romance book will be sent to Kensington, which is the second largest romance publisher in the world. It's Kensington's Zebra Books division. And Kensington will take a look at it. Again, no guarantees. So, no guarantees.
Well, there aren't any.
Are there any other ever guarantees? It's so hard to get published.
If you've listened to this show for a while, you've heard what the authors have to say about it.
That's right.
Don't give up. Try. You hear these authors have tried for 5, 6, 7, 10 years before they hit it big.
Perseverance is probably the number one thing. We almost always ask authors, and we're going to ask Bill Gertz, you know, what's the most important thing, what's the number one lesson you can teach an aspiring writer?
Right. And now, he has a distinct advantage, being a writer for the paper.
True.
But, yeah, we'll find out how hard he had it.
He's got some credentials. He's got some credentials. I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have Bill Gertz, okay, author of Breakdown, all right? This is The Book Show. Cutting Edge, talk about cutting edge books. We want to talk with you on WLEE Hot Talk 990. We will be right back.
Are you sure there are spies in here?
I'm positive. And they have the secret plans with them. We've got to stop them and save the world.
How about that man? Over by the stalactite organ. Is he a spy?
He could be. They often disguise themselves as tourists. There's another one over by the frozen fountain formation.
Gosh, they're everywhere. Does Dad know we're looking for spies?
Nah, he thinks we're just touring the caverns.
Then let's leave it that way. We don't want to alarm him.
Good idea.
Luray Caverns, come. Be a caveman.
Yikes, did you see that?
See what?
Someone just went behind that stalagmite.
Old Original Bookbinders opened their first location in Richmond at 2306 East Carey Street in a renovated tobacco warehouse in historic Chaco Bottom. The Richmond location carries on many of the traditions that the original restaurant was founded and built upon. The menu combines traditional dishes like Oysters Rockefeller and Seafood Imperial with innovative preparations, like pan-seared sea bass with wild mushrooms and crispy onions. The regular menu offers fresh seafood, including a large selection of fresh fish and shellfish, prime beef, and live Maine lobster prepared simply with different sauces. The daily specials offer their chefs an opportunity to express their creative flair with innovative, unusual, and delicious preparations of soups, appetizers, entrees, and desserts. Call for reservations, 643-6900. Again, that's 643-6900. Old Original Bookbinders has been well received in Richmond. They are proud to establish their first new location right here in Richmond. 643-6900 for the Old Original Bookbinders.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to enovel.com. At enovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. Enovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, Enovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
Hello again from the road, folks. You know, the road's a great place to reconnect with people. Heck, I'd drive coast to coast just to keep a good conversation going. That's what traveling's all about, getting closer to your friends and family. And that's exactly why the folks at Choice Hotels came up to Get Together Sweepstakes, the Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn. You could win a trip for 10 to any Choice location in the continental U.S. Get together with your family in Portland. Get together with your friends in San Antonio. Or put everybody on a plane and get together in Orlando. But first, get to ChoiceHotels.com to enter to win free airfare, 4 nights accommodations, and $500 spending money per person. Or call 800-4-CHOICE and ask for special seniors rates at participating Econo Lodge and Roadway Inns. I'll see you on the road.
No purchase necessary. Void in Florida and where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends January 31st, 2003 and is open to U.S. residents 18 years or older. To enter or for official rules and conditions, go to choicehotels.com. All program rules, regulations, and conditions apply.
Hello?
Hi, is this the North Point Oceanographic Institute?
Yes, it is.
And do you have shrimp there?
Yes, the Institute has several species of shrimp.
Okay, well, how much would you say 30 of your shrimp cost?
I'm not really sure.
Because right now, at Red Lobster, you can get 30 delicious shrimp for $9.99. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you can mix and match a whole plate full of savory scampi, shrimp pasta, and golden fried shrimp. Do you have anything like that at the Institute?
No.
30 scrumptious shrimp for $9.99. Now at Red Lobster.
Do you love to read? If so, we have the magazine for you. Pages Magazine is filled with interviews with your favorite authors, news about publishing, and information on all the latest book releases. Visit www.ireadpages.com to subscribe. As a Bookshow listener, you'll get one full year at 6 big issues for the incredible low price of just $10. Just visit ireadpages.com and click on subscribe. Enter the Bookshow in the promotion code, and you'll be a Pages subscriber. Also, visit our website to receive a free sample issue with no obligation. See for yourself why Pages is the magazine for people who love to read books.
Welcome to the Book Show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
This is Cutting Edge Talk about cutting edge books. And tonight we are talking to Bill Gertz, New York Times best-selling author. And he has written a book called Breakdown, How America's Intelligence Failures Led to September 11th. A pretty compelling read. And very timely, I might say. And we have Bill Gertz on the line.
Bill, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Welcome to the Book Show, Bill.
Glad to be with you.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
I just finished your book this afternoon, and I really enjoyed it. But before I get to it, just a little bit of background for our audience. Tell me about yourself, and what did you do before you became a Washington Times columnist and before you became a famous New York Times best-selling author?
Well, that's basically been my life as a reporter, has been at the Washington Times. I've been a national security reporter at Times for 17 years. Before that, I worked for a sister paper that was once called the News World and then the New York City Tribune. All that time, I was in Washington covering the issues here. And it's been a pretty good run. I've focused on national security issues, which are intelligence and defense issues. My first book came out in 1999, was called Betrayal, and then in 2000, The China Threat, and Breakdown was released in August.
Well, let me ask you, you really analyze a lot of different issues here. You talk about what you see as a breakdown in our intelligence agencies, but I want to ask a real simple, basic question. Do you believe that American intelligence should have anticipated 9/11?
Yes. It's a simple answer. The complex answer is we had the signs. We knew that this group, Al-Qaeda, had declared its intention to kill Americans, both civilian and military. Not only did they declare that, but they actually began carrying that out through a series of bombing attacks overseas, and not enough was done to deal with that. We just didn't focus on the threat.
Now, are you saying that we should have actually known the specific 9/11, it was going to happen, and we could have prevented it, or that something like this was bound to happen soon?
The first. We could have stopped it. Let me give you an example. If we had a good, my point is the reason that we didn't do it is because our intelligence system is broken, and that was really the breakdown that I write about in the book.
Right.
The closest we came to getting at this plot before it was carried out was in August with the arrest of Zakaris Moussaoui. He was part of the conspiracy. He's now being charged with that. He's going to be put on trial. And when they uncovered him, if we had had a good intelligence capability, the FBI would have handled the case much differently. What they did, they went in the front door, started questioning Moussaoui. His immediate reaction was, you're only doing this because I'm a foreigner and I'm a Muslim. They backed off. They got the lawyers involved. The lawyers were so timid about it that they wouldn't even allow any investigation, much less an intelligence investigation. And it delayed it enough until after September 11th. Now, if we had handled this differently as an intelligence case, the first thing they would have done would not have been to tip Moussaoui off that he was under investigation, and therefore he understood that there was great danger to their operation. If they had put him under surveillance, listened to his phone conversations, there's a very good chance he would have communicated before September 11th with some of the plotters, and that could have immediately, because of our good technical capabilities, I think we could have unraveled the plot before it was carried out.
Well, Bill, you're talking about when Zakaris Moussaoui was in the Pan Am Flight Academy, was in Eagan, Minnesota, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and that's when we fingered him, and you're saying that we should have questioned him, debriefed him, right? We should have put him through rigorous questioning.
No. Behind the scenes surveying.
Yeah, clandestine.
Ah, okay. Clandestinely track his communications.
Right.
And you think that we would have been able to track them, and it would have led to some of the other hijackers?
Yes.
Well, I agree with that statement, Alex. But my problem is, with all the other bad people in the world, why him? Why? I mean, to put all his resources on him. What sign said Moussaoui is the person?
Good question. Now, add some of the other key failures that have been identified, both in my book and just in the last 2 weeks in Congress. Okay, there were a couple of other key lapses that really were extremely damaging. The first had to do with two terrorists, one whose name was Khalid al-Madar, and the other was Nawaf al-Hazmi.
Mm-hmm.
These were two guys who were identified by the CIA in Malaysia in the January of 2000. This was a key meeting. They knew that people in that meeting, this was a group of Al-Qaeda, people at that meeting were involved in the bombing of the USS Cole in October 2000. Two guys who came to the United States, these two guys, the CIA tracked them into the country and failed to notify the FBI until months after they had arrived. When they finally did notify the FBI, when the FBI wanted to investigate, do you know what the CIA told the FBI? I'm sorry, we can't share this information with you because there's a prohibition against sharing intelligence with law enforcement authorities. This was an obstacle that had been put in place under Janet Reno at the Justice Department. And the reason they did that was is they were concerned that intelligence information would taint prosecutions. One of the FBI agents who testified said he complained later about what he called the bureaucratic wall. He said, I don't know who put this wall up, but somebody's going to die as a result. And he was right.
Boy, was he.
Let me ask you about the Philippine evidence. There was a man named Murad, right? M-U-R-A-D.
Abdul Murad, yes.
Abdul Murad. Tell me about Abdul Murad, and do you believe that this was one of the signals that our intelligence community missed?
Yes. This is in the chapter of the book that I called The Loud Bang That No One Heard.
Right.
And the reason I call it that was because it had to do with a project, terrorist plot called Project Bojinka, which is Serbo-Croatian for loud bang. I don't know how the terrorists picked that, but that was their term for it. But it goes back to 1995 when Abdul Murad and Ramzi Youssef, who had escaped New York after the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and landed in Manila, were in an apartment mixing chemicals, special chemicals for small bombs that they wanted to use on aircraft to bring down airliners. Well, some of the chemicals caught fire, and the Philippines Fire Department got there. They noticed some Arab men. They called the police. Youssef got away, was eventually captured, but they did get Murad, and they also got Youssef's laptop computer. And on this laptop computer, again, Philippines didn't have any problem going through that computer. It was coded. They called in a cipher expert who decoded it. And in that, they found information that Al-Qaeda was planning to use, first of all, that they were planning to send their members to flight school training, and second, that they had some plans, somewhat vague, for using aircraft in terrorist attacks. They specifically mentioned flying small planes filled with explosives into CIA headquarters in Langley and FBI headquarters in downtown Washington. The FBI was informed about it, the CIA was informed about it, and it set off no alarm bells at any intelligence service in the U.S.
Let me ask you a question about our immediate past president, Bill Clinton. You're a little bit hard on him. You believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm characterizing what you said in the book, but you believe that Clinton failed us because he did not come down mostly on Bin Laden. What's your feeling about President Clinton?
Well, my view is that there's plenty of blame to go around for successive administrations. That said, I think the Clinton administration, through what I mentioned earlier about some of the policies that they adopted, really contributed to the intelligence failure in a major way. What do I mean by that? Well, everything that the Clinton administration did in dealing with terrorism was to deal with it in a legalistic sense. They loved the lawyers in the Clinton administration.
You come down hard on lawyers, too.
There's nothing wrong with that, yeah. Alex. Alex is an attorney. You have to deal with that, too.
Yeah. No, well, the other thing is they didn't like intelligence officers.
Right.
That was really the thing. And you'd have to go back even further, and I trace the decline of American intelligence to 1975 when we had some oversight hearings that were very destructive and created almost an anti-intelligence hysteria. And it also created a whole generation of officials who carried this bias against intelligence into government. The hearings were to look at alleged abuses. There were some abuses, but for the most part, they were exaggerated. But the impact was that we really shackled our intelligence agencies, and that really hurt us when it came time to dealing with stateless bands of Islamic extremists. The whole intelligence system, it's very good at spying on foreign governments and foreign militaries, but when you get people who operate in clandestine groups and don't have headquarters and don't have national capitals for the most part, the system doesn't work well.
Why don't we talk a little bit about remedies and solutions to what you see as a breakdown in our intelligence community? What do we need to do? What do you think, for example, about the new Department of Homeland Defense and the reorganization?
Yeah. It's actually the Department of Homeland Security, It's going to be a fairly large $37 billion a year bureaucracy. But the interesting thing is, as it relates to my subject, intelligence, it really doesn't do anything to affect the structure and function of U.S. intelligence. And that was done deliberately because of the intelligence bureaucracy didn't want it. Now, what it is going to do is something that's going to be very, very important if it's done right. The functions that will be included in the Department of Homeland Security include such things as the Customs Service, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, Border Patrol. These are what I call gatekeeper security functions. They're really kind of the last line of defense. They're not intelligence functions in the sense that intelligence provides both a defense and an offense if need be. And this is really needed. And I'm hopeful that even though it is a large bureaucracy, that it will be successful in fixing those functions at the very least. The problem is, and this is really the key problem with the intelligence bureaucracy, is that when it started out, it was small, it was focused, its people were focused, but gradually, and this is probably true of most organizations, it became a competition between doing the mission and function and preserving the organization, the bureaucracy. And there's a certain catch-22 in there, is that to do your mission, you're going to need a bureaucracy, but what often happens and has happened today in intelligence is the bureaucracy has turned inward, and they're totally focused on their own survival, protecting their budget, protecting their people, not really focusing on the mission at hand.
All right. What do you think about Congress? Is Congress to blame at all?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, there was this destructive oversight back in the 70s, which was really the work of liberal Democrats, some of them very left-wing liberal Democrats. But then the pendulum swung in the other direction, and you have the Republicans reacting to the anti-intelligence period with what I call benign neglect. Oversight, in a sense, beginning in the late 80s and going through much of the 90s, became kind of cheerleading for intelligence. And the bureaucracy, the intelligence bureaucracy, swallowed them up in a bureaucratic sense. Mm-hmm. Something like, if you were to do a survey of the staff of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, I would guess that upwards of 80% are former intelligence people. And in the case of the House Intelligence Committee, you have a former CIA officer who has been extremely protective, overprotective of the CIA. And this has been destructive.
Bill, let me ask you a question. This just occurred to me. Here's a hypothetical for you. Suppose that Ronald Reagan had been president in the 90s. And suppose that the facts were the same. We had the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. We had, and remember there was the bomb in the basement. Okay, we had the attack on the American embassies in Africa. We had the USS Cole. Now, do you think that Ronald Reagan's response would have been anything like Bill Clinton's, where we just sent over some cruise missiles and destroyed a factory? Or do you think that Ronald Reagan would have launched a serious pursuit of Osama bin Laden and really tried to nail him?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so, too.
Ronald Reagan would be doing exactly what George Bush is
exactly.
doing now.
The cowboys.
Exactly. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what I think.
Now, the problem is, even under Reagan, the bureaucracy had already opposed the Republicans. I point out in the book that even when the CIA was doing the covert action program in Afghanistan, which from a policy standpoint was a layup, there was broad support for it, the CIA bureaucracy fought against it tooth and nail. In particular, they fought against the sending Stinger missiles to the Mujahideen. And they referred to their Republican policy people as cowboys and fanatics. And this is from the CIA bureaucrats for the most part.
All right, Bill, we're going to take a break, okay? And then we're going to come back. So stay
okay.
with us on the line.
All right.
This is the Book Show, Cutting Edge Talk About Cutting Edge Books. And we are talking to Bill Gertz, author of Breakdown, How America's Intelligence Failures led to September 11th. We're on WLEE Hot Talk 990. The book show is going to be right back.
A murder, a mystery where everybody bleeds. A fantasy, a thriller with romance and disease. Diary entry 9th of May 62. We've had some ugly babies, but now we're quite good. Diary entry 62, end of May. It looks as if the nose and chin are definitely here to stay. Now hit a step.
Remember when you were little and the most fun you had was the fun you made for yourself? Like making a tent out of kitchen chairs and a blanket. Or pretending you were called on to make the last basket for the championship of the world. Imagination is a wonderful thing. And when you come to Luray Caverns with your kids, be sure and bring it with you. The kids will. There's no telling what their minds will see in the cave's formations. They'll be pretending that they're exploring an ancient galaxy, or hiding from spies, or looking for lost treasure. And if you've got any kid left in you, you will too.
Luray Caverns, be a caveman!
Old Original Bookbinders opened their first location in Richmond at 2306 East Carey Street in a renovated tobacco warehouse in historic Chaco Bottom. The Richmond location carries on many of the traditions that the original restaurant was founded and built upon. The menu combines traditional dishes like oysters Rockefeller and seafood imperial with innovative preparations like pan-seared sea bass with wild mushrooms and crispy onions. The regular menu offers fresh seafood, including a large selection of fresh fish and shellfish, prime beef, and live Maine lobster prepared simply with different sauces. The daily specials offer their chefs an opportunity to express their creative flair with innovative, unusual, and delicious preparations of soups, appetizers, entrees, and desserts. Call for reservations, 643-6900. Again, that's 643-6900. Old Original Bookbinders has been well received in Richmond. They are proud to establish their first new location right here in Richmond. 643-6900 for the Old Original Bookbinders.
Windows, windows, windows.
If you need windows before you go anywhere else, come to Fisher's Home Improvements, the showroom of Richmond. Fisher's Home Improvements has the best new and replacement windows for your home. And if you need siding, Fisher's has siding for your home with installation and service far exceeding the competition. Visit Fisher's Showroom at 5207 9 Mile Road or call 737-6024, 737-6024. Fisher's Home Improvements, the window showroom of Richmond.
Do you like to write? If so, Writer's Digest, the world's leading magazine for writers, is for you. Since 1920, Writer's Digest has provided expert writing instruction, inspiration, and up-to-date marketing information. Each month, readers turn to Writer's Digest to discover technical columns geared towards specific genres, including screenwriting, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, and more. Publishing information, including how to write solid cover letters that catch the interest of agents and editors. Tips and tricks for overcoming writer's block. Career opportunities, interviews with best-selling authors, tools of the trade, including the latest information on writing software and hardware, legal advice for writers, and much more. Log on to www.writersdigest.com/thebookstore today and ask for your two free issues. You'll see why more than 200,000 writers rely on Writer's Digest every month to learn the secrets of getting their words polished, published, and paid for.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to enovel.com. At enovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. Enovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, Enovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
Paperback writer. Welcome to the book show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
This is Cutting Edge Talk about Cutting Edge Books, and we've been talking to Bill Gertz, author of Breakdown, How America's Intelligence Failures Led to September 11th. And Bill, is this book available at all the book retailers like Borders and Barnes & Noble?
Yes, today it was number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list, so usually they put those books out in most bookstores pretty prominently displayed, and they usually have a good discount.
Congratulations on that.
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
Got a quick question for you before. Alex got a bunch of them, but reading through the Drudge Report, where they're talking about the Bush administration, and I just want to hear how you respond to the statement from the administration. Do we really need a book for sale in every every store in America that outlines our weaknesses? Let's see. If Mr. Gertz is trying to embarrass the country, I would simply ask, what is to gain, and where is his loyalty?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to respond to quotes from anonymous officials.
Yeah, I saw that, too. That's good. So take it with a grain
ridiculous.
Of salt, okay?
You know, I mean,
it was probably Hillary that sent it, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to even suggest that. It wasn't easy to write this book. You know, I'm not a critic of intelligence because I'm sensitive to this notion that there are people in my camp, which is kind of the right of center, who view anybody who criticizes intelligence as part of the anti-intelligence hysteria. But to me, it's really not a question of pointing the finger of blame so much as getting an accounting. We have been spending on average about $35 billion a year on intelligence, and when this kind of failure occurs, we need to get some accounting. And that's one of the key things I found in the intelligence community, is because so much of their work is done in secret that they've managed to escape the kind of accountability that they deserve.
The way I look at it, and I truly do hope that this book gives them the kick in the pants to get their act together, get rid of the bureaucracy, and come on, you know, this is for America.
Yeah, it is. And it is. I make some constructive recommendations in there, and it's based on, you know, my 17 years of covering intelligence and talking with top people. You know, I've met every CIA director since Bill Casey. And the system really is broken, and there's a great reluctance to want to address that. But the key thing that we need to fix, and this is so important in the war on terrorism, is we need a new clandestine service that's going to be oriented and directed towards getting terrorists. That means finding their support networks, getting close to them,
right,
planting agents inside.
Got a question for you, and this is a policy question, okay, Bill? I recently read a statistic that said that either all or almost all hijackings were committed by individuals of Middle Eastern descent. Hmm. My policy question for you is, should the United States engage in profiling
versus strip searching 85-year-old women?
Yes. I mean, that's only common sense.
Why
don't we do it? Well, you know, this is, I would say that it's the result of
PC.
At least a decade of politically enforced political correctness. You know, this is really, you know, people criticize political correctness when it comes to free speech and so on, and it's prevalent on a lot of campuses. But when it comes to national security, this is political correctness has cost us lives, and I'm convinced of that. We had testimony from an FBI agent who said when he recommended, this was Kenneth Williams, who wrote the Phoenix memo from FBI field office in Phoenix, he said we need to start looking at Arabs who are going to flight schools in America. And the initial response he got from headquarters was, we're not sure that's legal. That could be ethnic profiling. So this is how far we've come. Now, you know, there may be a place for that somewhere in some sectors of society, but when it comes to national security and intelligence, it's deadly.
I agree. Another policy question for you, Bill. Should we arm our pilots?
Yeah, my feeling about that is...
With
sidearms.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I believe that you know, that's what a good portion of the pilots want. You know, the alternative is what? Marshals. And you know, I have a good case study in my book about Yuri Barlev, who was a El Al pilot, and back in 1970, when he was confronted with this two terrorists banging on the door of the front cabin with knives to the throat of two flight attendants, and You know, he had to think, do I let him in and give up my plane, or what do I do? And he decided, no, I'm not going to be hijacked. It was shortly after takeoff, so he knew that his passengers were in their seats, put the plane in a steep dive, and the marshals that are on LL planes jumped the terrorists, killed one of them, and managed to prevent the plane from being hijacked.
Hmm. Good, quick thinking.
Let me ask you about the INS. I was reading, I think it was towards the end of the book, that Mohammed Atta and another one of the hijackers received a letter some 6 months after the hijackings from the INS requesting something or informing them of something involving their visa.
Yes.
And so...
Is this the most screwed up organization in we have?
Yeah,
or
what is wrong with the INS, and what do we need to do to fix it?
It's really a democracy. Bureaucracy that's broken, in the worst sense of the word. I mean, the case in point was that they had applied for an extension of their visas, and they were notified that after they had already committed, the worst act of terrorism on American soil.
Right. And by the way, I'm sorry, for those of you, we said INS, that's the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Right.
Go on, Bill, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and clearly that is a key gatekeeper function that's broken. And what you have is that the FBI and the CIA... they were resisting the kind of changes that would have fixed things. One congressional intelligence staffer that I interviewed told me that at one point the oversight committees wanted to mandate a special a law within the intelligence bill that would require the standardization of transliterated names, because one of the problems with Arabic names is they can be translated in several different ways. So they wanted to try to standardize it so that when you, so that Mohammed is spelled with an M-U and an M-O, and it could be one way. And that would help in being able to identify people. And the intelligence community resisted it. They didn't want to do it. They felt it was something that shouldn't be done.
Bill, I think we're going to have to end the interview here. Jack and I both appreciate you coming on the book show.
Okay. Well,
congratulations on an excellent work breakdown. By the way, I do read the Washington Times on occasion. We're based here in Richmond, Virginia, and enjoy your columns very much.
Well, if you ever want to see my stories, I have a website that it's
Go ahead. Get a plug.
www.gertzfile.com.
Okay.
That's GERTZFILE.com.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us on the Book Show, and I hope you come back.
Thank you.
All right, Bill. Take care. That's Bill Gertz, author of Breakdown, How America's Intelligence Failures Led to September 11th. We're going to take a quick break, folks. Then we're going to come back for the top 10 best-selling books in America, Contest Corner, and a whole lot more. This is The Book Show, cutting-edge talk about cutting-edge books on WLEE Hot Talk 990. We'll be right back.
You can't judge honey by looking at the bee. You can't judge a daughter by looking at the mother. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Oh, can't you? Oh, you misjudge me. I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. Can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
Old Original Bookbinders opened their first location in Richmond at 2306 East Carey Street in a renovated tobacco warehouse in historic Chaco Bottom. The Richmond location carries on many of the traditions that the original restaurant was founded and built upon. The menu combines traditional dishes like oysters Rockefeller and seafood imperial with innovative preparations like pan-seared sea bass with wild mushrooms and crispy onions. The regular menu offers fresh seafood, including a large selection of fresh fish and shellfish, prime beef, and live Maine lobster prepared simply with different sauces. The daily specials offer their chefs an opportunity to express their creative flair with innovative, unusual, and delicious preparations of soups, appetizers, entrees, and desserts. Call for reservations, 643-6900. Again, that's 643-6900. Old Original Bookbinders has been well received in Richmond. They are proud to establish their first new location right here in Richmond, 643-6900. for the old original bookbinders.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to eNovel.com. At eNovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. eNovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, eNovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
Do you love to read? If so, we have the magazine for you. Pages Magazine is filled with interviews with your favorite authors, news about publishing, and information on all the latest book releases. Visit www.ireadpages.com to subscribe. As a Book Show listener, you'll get one full year at six big issues for the incredible low price of just $10. Just visit ireadpages.com and click on subscribe. Enter the Book Show in the promotion code, and you'll be a Pages subscriber. Also, visit our website to receive a free sample issue with no obligation. See for yourself why Pages is the magazine for people who love to read books.
Do you like to write? If so, Writer's Digest, the world's leading magazine for writers, is for you. Since 1920, Writer's Digest has provided expert writing instruction, inspiration, and up-to-date marketing information. Each month, readers turn to Writer's Digest to discover technical columns geared towards specific genres, including screenwriting, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, and more. Publishing information, including how to write solid cover letters that catch the interest of agents and editors. Tips and tricks for overcoming writer's block. Career opportunities, interviews with best-selling authors, tools of the trade, including the latest information on writing software and hardware, legal advice for writers, and much more. Log on to www.writersdigest.com/thebookstore today and ask for your two free issues. You'll see why more than 200,000 writers rely on Writer's Digest every month to learn the secrets of getting their words polished, published, and paid for.
Welcome to the Book Show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
This is Cutting Edge by Cutting Edge Books. We just got finished talking to Bill Gertz, author of Breakdown, How America's Intelligence Failures Led to September 11th. Now we are going to do the USA Today's top 10 best-selling books in America. And at number 10, Purity in Death by J.D. Robb. At number 9 in the country, gosh, I'm shocked, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Just won't go away.
It's a perpetual top 10. At number 8 in the nation, according to the USA Today, Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. I don't know much about diet books.
But that
now
still shocks me. That's staying up there. This must be, my
is it a
gosh,
fad? Is
weeks?
It a fad type diet, or do you know?
No, this has been going on for many years.
Many years, Dr. Atkins. Okay, so he's a mainstay.
And I can speak not firsthand, well, just enough of my friends have used it, and it works great.
Really? Okay, Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution, number 8 in the country. Number 7, Black House by Stephen King and Peter Straub. Number 6 in the nation, Last Man Standing by David Baldacci, Conspiracy of Violence Surrounds an FBI Agent. At number 5 in the nation, according to the USA Today, Red Dragon by Thomas Harris introduces consummately evil cannibal Hannibal Lecter. Okay, wait, now this Red Dragon's the movie.
Okay.
Red Dragon is a new movie coming out, and I believe it's a prequel to Hannibal and the Silence of the Lambs.
So is this,
right?
This is a new one in the top 10.
It was at number 8 last week.
Really?
It's number 5 this week, but the movie it's either just come out or is just about to come out, and it's called Red Dragon.
Okay.
And it's a prequel to the other Hannibal Lecter movies. At number 4 in the nation, and this is new to the top 10, Blessings by Anna Quinlan, caretaker and matriarch of a state, keep baby left on doorstep. Huh. Number 3 in the country, according to the USA Today, Full House by Janet Ivanovich, polo instructor falls for one of his more hopeless students. Number 2 in the nation, The Lovely Bones by Alice Siebel. I'll tell you, this
book
is
holding on.
Yeah, I mean, it's been number 1 or number 2 for many weeks. And by the way, The Lovely Bones, if you watch Good Morning America had it as a book club pick announced on August 7th. And this is new to the top 10. It is a brand new number one best-selling book in America, according to the USA Today. And it is Knights in Rodanth by Nicholas Sparks.
What's
Adrian, 45, rediscovers love after her husband abandons her. So it's a love story?
Not for me, but There's a lot of people out there
buying
it.
That's right. Romance, romance genre is by far the number one best-selling trade book, right? Mass market book, books in America is the romance books.
They wouldn't be writing about our lives, would they?
No, they wouldn't. All right.
Pretty boring.
Do we have some contests? And where can we find all the contests?
Absolutely. And not just our contests, all the information. If you want to listen to past shows, you want to hear Bill Gertz again, you'll find it all online at our webpage, www.thebookshow.com. Easy to find. Now, at thebookshow.com, you'll go to contests, and you'll find the contest I'm about to talk about. Not only that, but they're also sponsored by Writer's Digest. Now, Writer's Digest consistently has contests as well, and you'll find information there, just a click of a button. Let's see. Oh, before I get to these also, we have our our contest for the not-so-literate also. The free ones, just simply fill out your information, and we give away MP3 players, audiobooks, things like that. All the time, just for the heck of it, because we're nice people.
Right.
So just go to the website and sign up for that. Okay, the first contest, On the Far Side. This one is, let's see, open to all writers, unpublished within the last 5 years. Deadline for this is midnight on Halloween, October 31st. This one does have an entry fee. It's $15 for members and $20 for non-members. You'll have to go to the website to find out how you become a member of On the Far Side. So go there. All the information's there. Okay, contest number two, 7th Annual Dana Awards. In the novel, short fiction, poetry, they're giving away $1,000 in each category. And the most important thing, let me see if there are any fees involved with this one. This one looks like it's a freebie to sign up. Again, go to our webpage, thebookshow.com. Click on it. It has all the information on that one. And the third one is the PEP Writers Contest. Now, this one, if you listen to the show at all, you know most of these contests give away $5, $10, $100. This first prize is $10,000 plus 3 months free coaching. Second prize, $5,000. Third prize, $2,500.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I'd say so. All entries must be in prose, written and printed in English, double space, blah, 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 to go through all that stuff. Let's see, 500 words or less. So go to the webpage, thebookshow.com, all the information there. The submission deadline for this one is November 15th, and you can also sign up and win yourself an MP3 CD player from thebookshow.com.
Excellent. Well, we've had a great show, and again, the people at KFNX in Phoenix and WALE in Providence, welcome to The Book Show.
Good to have you guys
on board. Yeah, good to have you on board. Next week, folks, we've got a really, talk about a hot topic. We're going to be interviewing two people. One of them is C. Allman, and she is a model, and she's a sex gear entrepreneur. That's what it says on her audiobook. But we're also going to interview a medical doctor, too. They co-wrote this book, Extraordinary Lovemaking Techniques, and it's a lot deeper than that. It's not just about the mere act of making love.
It's not an erotic one. It's actually more of a fact versus fiction.
So it's a really cool book. It's an audiobook. We're going to be interviewing. So join us on The Book Show next week. I'm Alex with Jack.
See you next week.
Yeah, see you on The Book Show. Bye.
Hey, Billy, what you doing on the computer?
I'm playing Caveman. It's really cool.
It may be cool, but it's just a game. Come with me.
Where are we going?
You'll see.
Wow, Luray Caverns! A real cave!
Now you can really play Caveman.
Hey, fried eggs! Did cavemen eat fried eggs?
Probably not.
And look, a pool!
You know, nothing beats a day at Luray Caverns. Formed over 400 million years ago, it's filled with wondrous things. There's even a real pipe organ here we call our stalactite organ that actually uses real stalactites to form the tones. And then there's the, well, you'll just have to come see it for yourself.
See? You learned something.
I sure did. What'd I learn?
You learned that computers are great, but nothing beats the real thing.
Right. So come on, everybody.
Be a caveman!